From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. When Roe v. Wade was overturned in late June, there was a group of young people outside the Supreme Court celebrating. These teens and 20-somethings stood out because they were young, organized, and unapologetically anti-abortion. Their signs said it all. The future is anti-abortion, and I am the post-Roe generation. Many were part of a group called Students for Life.
I drove down here for Students for Life, and I'm excited. You can see the celebration, but we all know this is not where the work ends. This is where it begins.
The constitutional right to an abortion has just ended. But for many in the anti-abortion movement, it isn't enough. They're pushing the culture war further and attacking something millions of people rely on every day, hormonal birth control. It seems, well, contradictory. Why would you oppose abortion and also be against contraception? Wouldn't preventing unwanted pregnancies also prevent abortions? But groups like Students for Life don't see hormonal birth control as a way to prevent abortions. They see things like IUDs and even the pill as causing abortion. Kristen Hawkins is the president of Students for Life of America. Back in 2017, MSNBC's Joy Reid prodded Kristen on her position on birth control.
Do you think IUD should be illegal?
I don't think they should be illegal.
Interesting. All right. Well,
they put women at risk and they kill children.
Wow. Cool. What about the birth control pill?
I do not think it should be legal. I actually think that it shouldn't be legal, but that's not what we're talking about.
Kristen doesn't really want to talk about birth control and tries to change the subject. Joy keeps pushing.
Kristen, we can't talk at the same time. I just wanted to get just clarity. You think that the pill and the IUD should be illegal, right?
In my ideal world, yes.
Wow.
But I don't think that's actually something we're working towards in the pro-life movement.
But that was 5 years ago. This year, Students for Life has been on social media doubling down on the idea that birth control is harmful and can cause abortions. Reveal's Amy Mustafa digs into where this medical misinformation came from and how it's spreading.
Students for Life is becoming the new face of the anti-abortion movement. The group has a large staff and a bigger budget than many other anti-abortion organizations. And Students for Life has a large social media following. To understand what makes the group popular, it's important to meet influencer Autumn Higashi.
I was 16 years old when I first began in the pro-life movement. I saw a Teen Vogue article pop up on my Facebook feed one day titled, "What to Get a Friend Post-Abortion." I sat down and I wrote a 10-minute response video because I was fearful.
The video looks like it was shot in a dark room. Autumn is dramatically lit from behind. She's wearing a blazer and sort of looks like a serious young attorney. She criticizes Teen Vogue for suggesting gifts like a heating pad, a Ruth Bader Ginsburg coloring book, or a funny movie.
How offensive to think a comedy would be a good antidote for the pain your friend might be feeling. You know when this would be appropriate? After your friend got their wisdom teeth taken out, not after they've had an abortion.
Students for Life picked up that video and it has over 400,000 views. Today, Autumn is a spokesperson for the group.
It didn't take that long for me to find these videos.
That's Annabelle Sosa. She's part of a team of UC Berkeley law and journalism students who've been helping Reveal report on reproductive rights this last year. She says Students for Life strategy involves reaching out to a younger demographic on TikTok and Instagram.
Like, it's really smart. You wanted to reach high schoolers because they're most impressionable. And also, they are going to repost and they're going to engage with social media.
The group also recruits young people on school campuses, from graduate schools all the way down to middle schools. Students for Life got its start on a school campus decades ago.
They were founded in 1988 at Georgetown University.
That's Elizabeth Moss, who goes by Moss. She's part of the Berkeley team helping with research. Moss points out that Students for Life isn't just a tiny student-run organization.
There's also Students for Life Action, which is a 501c4, meaning they can lobby our legislatures. And through Students for Life Action, they also are responsible for writing some life at conception bills.
These state laws that were passed ban abortion from the moment of fertilization. Students for Life also has built some serious political clout, like the Federalist Society's Leonard Leo, who handpicked Donald Trump's 3 conservative Supreme Court justices. He's on the board of Students for Life. Moss says it took a while for the group to gain this kind of power, though, and it really coincided with them recruiting one of today's anti-abortion movement superstars.
The organization they are today really starts with Kristen Hawkins when she joins in 2006.
Moss pulls up the nonprofit's 990 tax form on her computer to show me how the organization begins to increase its revenue once Kristen joins. In 2006, they made just shy of $200,000. And by 2008, it's $1 million.
And then they're doubling their revenue to just under $12 million a year.
It's not just about revenue growth.
Kristen Hawkins is Students for Life.
Kristen knows how to draw a crowd on social media. Annabelle plays me this viral video. It's called Pro-Choicer Defeated by Simple Logic, and it has 2.3 million views on YouTube.
When does the fetus become living?
That's actually a good question, but that line...
Yeah, of course, because you don't know it, because it's living.
Oh, you actively deny science, ma'am.
How am I... What science did I deny?
That it's a child inside of you.
The student describes that child as a clump of cells.
When does this clump of cells or fetus become living?
When it can sustain its own life.
But when is that? When is the sustainability? My newborns aren't sustainable.
Understanding exactly when Students for Life believes a group of cells becomes a life is really important, because it's the way the group justifies opposing many forms of birth control. Here's Autumn explaining when she thinks life begins on Students for Life's TikTok.
An egg, not a human being. A sperm, not a human being. They unite at conception and there create a unique life that has never existed before and will never exist again.
For Students for Life and many other anti-abortion activists, this moment of conception is when a life begins, and therefore when a pregnancy begins. This is a religious idea, not a medical or scientific one. But for Students for Life, it means that anything that interferes or even has the chance of interfering with a fertilized egg is an abortion. The group explains this line of reasoning in a video about birth control pills and IUDs.
If you're using hormonal contraception, you are very likely using an abortifacient. This means that you could actually be causing an abortion without knowing it. Let's review how some types of contraception can in fact cause an abortion. The pill is one of the most well-known forms of birth control. The pill can work by making it less likely an egg will be fertilized, but it can also prevent implantation of the fertilized egg. Since life begins at conception, this means it changes the body's chemistry to reject a fertilized egg, which is the same as an abortion. Surprised? The American College...
Yeah, so I think this is like the part of the show where you cue the medical expert to go over this video.
Moss is right, so we called up Diana Blythe.
And then when did you join NIH?
Oh, a long time ago. I joined in 1982.
Blythe works for the National Institute of Child and Human Development, a branch of the NIH, or National Institutes of Health. She's the chief of the contraceptive development program there, and she's been doing government research for decades, under both Republican and Democratic administrations.
We're currently developing a male contraceptive gel that's a combination of 2 hormones in a single gel.
Now, at this point, I'm definitely imagining Spy Kids level labs and contraptions. But I want to stay focused on the Students for Life video. I played it for Blythe.
There are other forms of hormonal contraception,
but most of them work the same way. While preventing fertilization is one thing, preventing implantation is the same as causing an abortion. Many people don't know this. Like and share this video to help inform others.
Well, it's not based on scientific data. It's based on speculation that these things might happen.
Speculation that a fertilized egg might fail to implant. But Blythe tells us that hormonal birth control, like the pill and emergency contraception, primarily works by preventing ovulation, meaning there's no egg to fertilize to begin with. Hormonal IUDs also suppress ovulation and block sperm from being able to reach an egg. Does hormonal contraception fail sometimes? Yes, but rarely. The pill is 93% effective even if you forget to take it occasionally. Could an egg get fertilized but be prevented from implanting? Possibly, but there's no scientific evidence of this. And there's another thing. Lots of eggs don't implant, even when you're trying to get pregnant. Take this landmark study done in the late 90s on women who are not taking birth control.
What they found out was that probably half of fertilized eggs that get to the point of beginning implantation, those are lost. We don't know exactly what's wrong, why it doesn't implant normally, but they're lost before the woman even misses a period. So she would have no idea, you know, this had occurred.
And this is why Blythe says doctors don't consider someone pregnant until after a successful implantation, not after fertilization. We tried several times to speak to Autumn and Kristen from Students for Life, but the group declined all interview requests and didn't answer our emailed questions. This medical misinformation that the group is promoting, the idea that hormonal contraception can cause an abortion by preventing implantation, Students for Life didn't make it up. In fact, it comes from the language on the packaging of the emergency contraception Plan B. To understand how this happened, I went to Chris Jokluk. He's an assistant professor of ethics at the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology.
I actually wrote most of my dissertation on the ethics and politics surrounding emergency contraception.
Chris wrote that dissertation after his alma mater, Notre Dame, a Catholic university, sued the federal government. It didn't want to cover contraceptives for its employees. There was a similar case happening at the same time. The owners of Hobby Lobby, a craft store, also didn't want to cover contraceptives on religious grounds and claimed that emergency contraception causes abortions. Lots of other conservative groups argued the same thing, and the Supreme Court didn't question it. Chris was intrigued.
It's a really interesting case that exemplifies how values influence scientific judgment, but also how the anti-abortion movement has been able to place scientists into very powerful roles to impose their value judgments on everybody.
Chris considers the labeling of emergency contraception a good example of this. I went out and bought it so I could see for myself.
So here's the pill. And here's the leaflet. Okay, so
I read the leaflet out loud.
It works mainly by stopping the release of an egg from the ovary. It is possible that Plan B one step may also work by preventing fertilization of an egg, the uniting of sperm with the egg, or by preventing attachment, implantation to the uterus womb.
It's a version of what Students for Life has been claiming, and it turns out this language goes back to the early 2000s, under George W. Bush's administration. The FDA was trying to decide if Plan B should be sold over the counter, so it put together a joint advisory committee.
At the committee meeting, you had several science advisors who, if you look into their background, are staunch anti-abortionists.
One of those science advisors stood out to Chris.
And during the meeting, he in particular argued that it was imperative, ethically imperative, that this label, if it is approved for over-the-counter use, if it's approved, that it describes the mechanism.
Meaning that language I read earlier, describing the different ways that Plan B could work.
He thought it could provide patients who believe that life begins at fertilization the ability to have informed consent.
In other words, it's coded language for anyone who's anti-abortion and believes life begins at conception. The committee is asked to vote on whether the drug should be sold over the counter or not. 23 out of 27 say yes. They're also asked to weigh in on whether the package should include the special language, that Plan B could possibly prevent the implantation of a fertilized egg. And less than a third believe it's necessary, but the language makes it into the packaging anyway.
The drug company ended up in conversations with the FDA behind closed doors, which we are not privy to do this in an unprecedented manner.
We reached out to the FDA to get their take on what happened, but they didn't get back to us in time for this broadcast. Chris believes this was a political compromise to get the drug approved for over-the-counter use more quickly.
The morning after contraceptive pill is now being sold over the counter. But there's more.
He also believes that Plan B is an example of misleading scientific information, making it into the labeling of a drug because of someone's personal values.
The FDA is the ultimate authority for science, and we often think of science as value-free and non-political. And so if the FDA-approved label says it, then that's just science. That's just the facts. And that's been really unfair.
Most people who use Plan B probably don't realize this language exists. But for Students for Life, the language, even though it's not backed by science, has helped legitimize their claims.
So, Plan B. It can work to prevent fertilization, but it also can prevent a fertilized egg from implanting into the uterus, causing an early abortion.
That's Autumn again.
If you were to take any amount of time to research this, you would know that. The FDA has published that Plan B can prevent a fertilized egg from implanting. And again, a fertilized egg is a life according to science.
But it's not science that considers a fertilized egg a life. It's Autumn and Students for Life and others who believe that's when life begins.
This story was produced and reported by Reveal's Amy Mustafa with help from students from UC Berkeley's Human Rights Center and Investigative Reporting Program. Anti-abortion activists aren't just making the radical claim that birth control can cause an abortion. They're also adopting the language of wellness influencers who say birth control is bad for the body.
Why would any person want to just put hormones in their body every single day?
That's next on Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Millions of Americans use the pill and IUDs to prevent unwanted pregnancies because both are really effective. But like with any medication, there can be side effects. People complain about everything from nausea to mood changes, and that's fueled a backlash against hormonal birth control. Wellness influencers on social media call it toxic and recommend people stop using it. And these messages are being picked up by another kind of influencer, anti-abortion activists. Some even use the term green sex to promote what they consider to be more natural methods of contraception. That's the topic of our next story, which comes to us from journalist Kiara Butler, senior editor at Mother Jones, who's been investigating misinformation that targets women. Hey, Kiara.
Hi, Al.
So, Kiara, what are these more natural methods? Is it the old rhythm method where you track your period to figure out when not to have sex? Because isn't that really ineffective?
No, this isn't a throwback to the rhythm method. These are more complicated methods, which, broadly speaking, involve a woman's observations of her body to predict fertility. To keep it simple, I'm going to refer to this as cycle tracking. And I think the easiest way for me to explain it is to tell you the story of a woman named Jessica. We're only using her first name because she talked to me about personal health information.
So I'm in California, and my kids are 8, 5, and almost 3.
Since her third child was born, she's been using a cycle tracking method called the Creighton model, created by Catholic medical providers. In 1968, the Pope at the time wrote a rule against all artificial contraception. That edict still stands today. And while many Catholics ignore it, the most devout don't, including Jessica.
So Jessica uses this method for religious reasons.
Right. And she hires a teacher to coach her in phone sessions on how to use the Creighton model.
It's a whole process. When you go to the bathroom, you take a tissue, fold it properly, and are observing, which is really fun when you have young kids in the house because they're like, what are you doing? My kids are like always in my space in the bathroom.
What Jessica's talking about is checking her cervical mucus.
There's a finger test method where basically you take your two fingers and you stretch the mucus to see how far it stretches, you know, anywhere from like a quarter inch, half an inch to an inch. The farther it stretches, generally the more fertile you are.
And then there's also the process of record keeping.
There's red stickers for when you're on your menstrual cycle. There's white babies and green babies, and then there's green stickers. And so essentially, for me, to avoid pregnancy, I can have sex generally anytime there's like a solid green sticker because that means I'm not fertile.
That sounds like a whole involved process.
Yeah. And other methods can get even more complicated. Some involve charting body temperature and hormones in urine to determine when you're most likely to get pregnant. And in the past few years, there's been an explosion of interest, thanks in part to Silicon Valley companies that have launched cycle tracking apps promising birth control by algorithm. Peter Thiel, you know, the billionaire who co-founded PayPal and has been giving millions of dollars in the midterm elections to candidates aligned with Donald Trump, he just invested in one. The market for these apps is expected to reach $3.9 billion by 2026. And part of the reason they've gotten so popular is because birth control has become a target of some wellness influencers who've been promoting the idea that hormonal birth control is harmful to the body.
So give me an example of some of the claims these wellness influencers are making.
So here's Jolene Brighton.
Have you ever heard of post-birth control syndrome? Bet you probably haven't, and your doctor probably hasn't either. Hi, I'm Dr. Jolene Brighton. And in this video,
Jolene isn't an MD. She's an ND, a naturopathic doctor. And she specializes in what she calls post-birth control syndrome, which she says is a whole host of health problems associated with the pill.
If you're taking hormonal contraceptives, you are losing antioxidants. It is causing oxidative stress, so it is busting up your cells like crazy. And you need to be replenishing those every day as long as you stay on that medication.
Busting up your cells like crazy doesn't sound very scientific.
Right. So, of course, there's absolutely no science to back up those claims or even the existence of post-birth control syndrome or this argument she makes on YouTube that hormonal contraception changes how women experience attraction.
What do women select for when they're on birth control? They actually select men who have more feminine features than masculine features, which is really interesting.
Like many influencers, she sells merchandise, and in her case, a special detox program for about $300.
I'm the first doctor to develop, document, and test clinical protocols to help women transition off of hormonal contraceptives and to support them while they're on it.
I asked Jolene to see her studies, but she never got back to me, and she also didn't respond to my questions via email.
So how popular are her videos? I mean, does she have a big following?
Yes. Jolene has a massive social media following, 420,000 on Instagram, almost 300,000 on TikTok. And her popularity has to do with the fact that a lot of women really do have bad side effects from hormonal contraception, like migraines and depression. And there are specific warnings around these methods for some women. Smokers, for example, can have a higher risk of blood clots. And it can be incredibly frustrating when physicians don't listen to women's very real complaints.
That's totally understandable that they would seek out alternatives. So what do doctors say about the negative effects of birth control?
I ask that question to Dr. Jenny Villavicencio, an OB-GYN and complex family planning specialist.
What I hope is that healthcare providers can really understand that while the side effects that people may be describing may not be borne out in the literature, that person's experience is their experience. And we need to honor that and respect that. And let's work with that person and find a birth control that works for them.
And something Dr. Villavicencio also points out is that the side effects and risks of pregnancy are actually much greater than being on hormonal birth control.
Pregnancy always has more risk than birth control, and it also potentially has more side effects than birth control. It has the same hormones at much higher levels and certainly has different consequences, as we know.
But that hasn't stopped many anti-abortion groups from promoting misinformation about the harms of hormonal birth control, including Live Action. That's a group that got some attention years ago for undercover videos that targeted Planned Parenthood. Here's a YouTube video of its founder, Lila Rose, speaking to conservative pundit Candace Owens.
Sex is supposed to be something safe as far as vulnerable, where you can be vulnerable, but it's not supposed to be something where you have to protect yourself from your partner with some latex or with a pill that sterilizes you or shuts down your hormones. How is that really self-giving and feeling vulnerable and free with someone?
It always freaks me out. Just instinctually always freaked me out where I would just say, why would any person want to just put hormones in their body every single day?
A pill that sterilizes you. I mean, that word choice is just striking.
For the record, the pill does not sterilize a person. I emailed Lila to ask about her comments, and she stuck to her incorrect claim and said the pill does temporarily sterilize you. And Lila isn't the only anti-abortion activist adopting the idea that hormonal birth control is unhealthy. Take the Guiding Star Project, for example. It's a network of women's health clinics founded by Leah Jacobson.
We believe that, you know, women's bodies naturally do three unique things, and that's ovulate, gestate, and lactate.
Guiding Star promotes itself as a network of health centers that empower women to love their natural bodies. At this 2012 company dinner, Leah is explaining how the organization was trying to gain a foothold in the wellness industry. The tape's a little noisy.
We've recognized that there is a really strong enthusiasm growing among women for things such as, breastfeeding and natural childbirth and some of these things. But it's typically among women that don't identify as pro-life. A lot of them identify as strongly pro-choice.
She sees these more liberal women as potential opportunities.
We'd love to get them into our building because not only does their financial support, being paid to the birthing space, help to support all the other organizations in the building, but with time, we believe that it's going to start to soften their heart and change their mind a little bit about the pro-life movement.
So Leah considers Guiding Star to be part of the pro-life movement. But when I asked her how abortion factors into her group's work, here's what she said.
You know, abortion is really not the issue that we're focused on. We're focused much more on a general women's health. And we tend to view that any unnatural interruption of a woman's natural body and what it's doing, that is a trauma against what her body is capable of. It's a trauma that, you're internalizing deeply that my body did something wrong. And in fact, getting pregnant means everything went tremendously right.
I guess you would consider hormonal birth control one of those traumas against a woman's body.
Yes, that's right. Guiding Star promotes cycle tracking and even has a special program that teaches the method to preteens. Leah told me in an email that she doesn't try to hide the fact that she believes, as she put it, that abortion is a poor substitute for women's healthcare services. And she said she's spoken publicly about that. But if you just stumbled upon the organization, either in person or on the web, you wouldn't know it's affiliated with the anti-abortion movement. You would probably think it's maybe like a naturopathic clinic or something.
Okay, so Guiding Star may not be transparent about its anti-abortion stance, but what's wrong with teaching cycle tracking?
The problem is that anti-birth control and anti-abortion activists are promoting these cycle tracking methods as being nearly as effective as hormonal birth control. But it depends on how you use them, and tracking your body can be way more complicated than taking the pill, for example. Let me take a step back and give you rates for how often contraception fails. And let's start with IUDs. So once it's inserted, there's nothing to do, and the failure rate is less than 1%. The pill's failure rate is also 1% if you take it every day. And if you miss here and there, the failure rate is 7%.
And how about cycle tracking methods?
So the CDC used to give them a 24% failure rate. But in 2019, that changed to a range between 2 and 23%. Here's a webinar from 2019 hosted by the Department of Health and Human Services about FABMs, or Fertility Awareness-Based Methods. That's the same as cycle tracking.
We're excited to host this webinar in the wake of the CDC updating the effectiveness rating for FABMs, recognizing that some of these natural methods are up to 98% effective for avoiding pregnancy.
So that language is misleading, because for the vast majority of these methods, you can only get to 98% if you use them perfectly. This new range is considered a victory by proponents of cycle tracking who've been pushing the CDC to give these methods a better effectiveness rating. That includes Dr. Marguerite Duane, who spoke at that HHS webinar. She's an MD, an adjunct professor at Georgetown University, and the head of a group called FACTS, which offers courses that doctors can take to maintain their medical licenses. Here she is talking about her group's efforts to a gathering of Catholic healthcare providers in 2018.
It's important we set the record straight. To do this, FACTS has partnered with an organization called Natural Womanhood to ask the CDC to update and report accurate data.
Natural Womanhood is another pro-cycle tracking group. Dr. Duane tells this audience her story about what inspired her to embrace what she calls natural family planning over hormonal birth control when she was a first-year medical resident.
It is drilled into you as a medical student. You do not let a woman leave the hospital with a baby without birth control on board. And that is what I was doing. And thankfully, this lovely woman here, Dr. Pearl Wong Ramirez, who is holding my youngest baby, Gianna, said to me, you know, you don't have to prescribe the birth control pill, you know, if it violates your conscience.
That's Dr. Duane talking to a group of Catholic doctors. Now, Dr. Duane herself is a devout Catholic, but I've seen her talk in other professional settings, and she doesn't explain like she does here that her personal beliefs are part of why she promotes cycle tracking over hormonal methods.
I can see how that's problematic if she's not transparent.
Right. And I haven't seen her mention that she speaks at anti-abortion conferences or her involvement with an anti-abortion think tank or that she sits on the board of a foundation that funds anti-abortion activists.
So did you try and talk to Dr. Duane about any of this?
Yes. I asked why she doesn't mention her full background when she presents. A spokesperson didn't answer that question and instead just said Dr. Duane welcomes the opportunity to present her work to audiences that support or oppose abortion.
So the bottom line here is that if you're going to use cycle tracking, you really need to understand that there's a range of effectiveness that depends on how closely you're able to monitor your body. And if you're not someone who can keep up with all the tracking, then your chances of getting pregnant are going to be much higher.
Yes, that's right. And I think Jessica is a good example of that. She used cycle tracking for about 3 years without getting pregnant, but then she got comfortable and she stopped being so rigorous. Earlier this year, she says she was feeling kind of out of it, so she gets a pregnancy test and it comes back positive. And for the first month, she doesn't tell anyone.
I was just in my head about how scary things were going to be, how we were going to care for this baby financially. And so when I get pregnant, I get very, very sick. I basically like can't move. I just have to like lay flat so that I'm not throwing up.
And here's where her story gets even heavier. At Jessica's first prenatal appointment, she found out that there was no heartbeat and that she was going to miscarry.
It was horrible to walk into that appointment and just get blindsided. And I just sat in my car and I just cried and I cried because, one, it's a loss. But two, I felt so guilty and shameful, like I caused it, you know, because I'm like, oh, I can't have this baby. Oh, my gosh, maybe I'll miscarry. You know, as awful as that sounds, but it was a thought in my head.
All those conflicting emotions, it must have been so hard.
Yes, she definitely found herself in a really difficult situation, both physically and emotionally. But Jessica isn't giving up. She says she's found another cycle tracking method that she hopes will be more effective. And it's important to remember that even though Jessica was using these methods mostly because of her faith, there are millions of women who turn to cycle tracking often because they really don't like their experience of hormonal birth control and they're worried about the potential health effects of using it for years. They're being told that these natural family planning systems work just as well as hormonal birth control. And that's in part because of this concerted effort by anti-abortion groups to convince women that the pill is bad.
Thanks so much for your reporting and bringing us this story.
Thank you, Al.
Kara Butler is a senior editor at Mother Jones. It's one thing to circulate misinformation about birth control online. But what happens when politicians start using it to try and pass bills?
Do you believe Plan B induces an abortion?
I believe it does, yes.
When we come back, the fight against birth control goes to the state capitol. That's next on Reveal. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letzi. This summer, when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt was ready. He raced to put the state's trigger ban on abortion into effect.
I am humbled to be a part of this and the first attorney general in the country to effectively end abortion.
Abortion was now outlawed, except in medical emergencies. Schmidt, who is seeking a U.S. Senate seat, scored big points with his conservative base. But just days into the ban, some unexpected news broke.
St. Luke's Health System is no longer offering emergency contraception at its Missouri locations. It says the Missouri law is ambiguous, but may be interpreted as criminalizing emergency contraception.
St. Luke's is a major healthcare provider in the region, and it was concerned that emergency contraception could be considered an abortion under the state's ban.
We simply cannot put our clinicians in a position that might result in criminal prosecution.
Let's just be clear. When you're using emergency contraception, time is not on your side. That's why it's often called the morning after pill, because you have to take it soon after having sex to prevent a pregnancy. Suddenly, the state's abortion ban was also limiting access to birth control, which could lead to more unwanted pregnancies. Soon, Missouri officials were trying to reassure the public that all forms of birth control were still legal.
Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt clarifies this law, saying that use of these drugs is not against the law in Missouri after all.
And St. Luke's started offering emergency contraception in Missouri again. But this confusion didn't come out of nowhere. Last year, Missouri lawmakers spent months fighting over whether birth control can cause an abortion. Reveal's Catherine Miskowski explains how misinformation about birth control is making its way into state politics.
In Missouri, even a tax that's been around for decades can get caught up in abortion politics. The Federal Reimbursement Allowance, or FRA, helps fund the state's Medicaid program. The Missouri State Legislature just has to extend the FRA to keep the billions flowing.
You know, a lot of discussion goes around it, but it is a, in a sense, a no-brainer. We're going to pass that bill because we need those dollars in the state.
State Senator Jill Shoup is a Democrat. She tells me about how this must-pass bill got complicated.
In 2021, one of our colleagues, a male colleague, Republican, stood up and offered an amendment to the FRA.
Madam President, my amendment's a simple amendment.
That male colleague was Senator Paul Wieland from Jefferson County.
What it does is it addresses the situation we have in Medicaid to where currently the state of Missouri is funding drugs that are abortifacients. So this
that's something that causes an abortion.
Any drug or device approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration that may cause the destruction or prevent the implantation of an unborn child defined in section 188.015.
So it's just implantation of an unborn child. What is Senator Wieland talking about? Well, in Missouri state law, even a fertilized human egg is defined as an unborn child. It's that Catholic idea again that life begins at conception. And it's been in the law here for more than 40 years. So for Senator Wieland, anything that could interfere with a fertilized egg developing is an abortifacient.
So it's just kind of going along and making our pro-life state even more pro-life and saying that state of Missouri will not pay for these abortion and drugs. Happy to answer any questions.
There are no questions. Nobody even asks exactly what drugs or devices Wieland is trying to stop the state from funding. But on his list are IUDs, which are among the most popular forms of birth control, and emergency contraceptives like Plan B.
Beck.
The amendment goes to a roll call vote, and it passes.
By your vote of 21 aye and 12 no, the amendment has been adopted.
But it isn't that simple. Under the Affordable Care Act, birth control is an essential health benefit. Failing to provide it to Medicaid patients could put the state out of compliance with federal law, risking billions of dollars. As the legislature grapples with this, the critical bill stalls. The stalemate goes on for months, and the legislative session ends.
This bill is so essential to the state's budget that members have to return to the Capitol to try to get it passed.
That the Senate is duly convened in the first extraordinary session of the first regular session and is ready.
Governor Michael Parson, a Republican, is worried. He puts out a statement begging the members of the legislature to pass the bill. "Let me be clear. I am pro-life," he writes. "I have supported pro-life measures my whole career, and I always will. However, we cannot allow narrow political interests to hold hostage vital healthcare funding and the success of our economy." He's talking about Whelan's initiative and an effort to defund Planned Parenthood, which is also holding up the bill. But Whelan isn't giving up. Here he is being questioned by Senator Doug Beck, a Democrat, who wants to protect funding for birth control.
Do you believe Plan B induces an abortion?
I believe it does, yes.
Okay, but it doesn't. Medically and scientifically, it doesn't.
Okay, so if it doesn't induce an abortion, then it would be paid for by the Medicaid program. Is Plan
B. Here's that same misinformation again, now playing out in the Missouri Senate. The idea that even though Plan B works by preventing ovulation, you just never know when it might keep a fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus. Missouri Right to Life compares using Plan B to playing Russian roulette.
Is Plan B a part of what you're trying to get banned?
It is listed as one of those drugs, correct.
And it says when used
to induce an abortion. It doesn't say when used for birth control. It says when used to induce an abortion.
I disagree with you that this is what this is about abortion. This is about birth control.
So we were in a standoff.
That's Senator Jill Shoup again.
We were actually in recess for hours. And one of my male counterparts, a Democratic colleague, came to me and said, "You have a good relationship with the Republican senators, the women senators. What do you think about going and talking to them?" And I said, "You know what? That's a great idea."
For the first time, women represented nearly a third of the state Senate.
11 women in Missouri Senate is more than we've ever had in Missouri's history.
And the women had already bonded. It started with a dinner party hosted by a government official.
The head of the Department of Conservation invited us to her husband's amazing man cave to just get away from the Senate chamber one night.
The women senators cooked up a literacy initiative to educate kids about the history of women in Missouri politics for the state's bicentennial. They even published a children's book called You Can Too. Working together on that uncontroversial project paved the way for them to bridge partisan divides. And they found on birth control, they could also agree. So they sat down with Senator Whelan.
And we explained to him that most of these methods he was talking about were actually birth control methods. And we said, "We are not going to support your amendment. Please remove it." He sat down in the room with all of us and he said, "Let me talk to some people." And he came back and he said, "Okay, I will remove my amendment."
The bill ends up passing without any restrictions on contraception. Whelan does manage to get a line put in there that says the state won't pay for any drug or device that causes an abortion. But that doesn't actually change anything in Missouri. The state already banned using public funds to pay for abortions. But this idea that some contraceptives cause abortions, it doesn't just go away.
St. Luke's Health System is no longer offering emergency contraception at its Missouri location.
Missouri's Attorney General Eric Schmidt clarifies this law, saying that use of these drugs is not against the law in Missouri after all.
When state officials implemented Missouri's abortion ban a year later, it wasn't just St. Luke's Health System that got confused.
People were scared, they were confused, and we have heard from our health centers across the state that they have been fielding call after call.
Michelle Truppiano is executive director of the Missouri Family Health Council. The group provides funding to reproductive health care centers that serve low-income people.
They were confused about whether or not they need to take their IUD out, or folks that are wanting to go ahead and get an IUD because they're fearful about what the legislature may do.
People here are making health decisions based on what they think might happen politically. In Idaho, that fear of having your birth control options restricted has already become a reality.
Last year, the Idaho legislature banned state colleges and universities from dispensing emergency contraception. And last month, the University of Idaho advised faculty and staff not to provide any form of birth control, including the pill. I wanted to know whether Missouri politicians will keep fighting to restrict contraception. Senator Wieland is term-limited out of his seat, and he didn't respond to interview requests. But I was able to catch up with the person who helped write his amendment. His name is Sam Lee.
I've been a lobbyist at the state capitol here in Missouri in Jefferson City for, well, about 37 years full-time. I'm also a deacon in the Catholic Church, married with four children and seven grandchildren.
Even though he helped craft Wieland's amendment, Sam doesn't think that limits on contraception are going to happen.
Senator Paul Wieland, a friend of mine, someone I've worked with, and he's wanted to do this for years. For Wieland, it was a personal thing. Paul's a Catholic. He didn't like voting for funding for Medicaid for years because he didn't like that the state was funding contraceptives. And so he put an amendment out, and it didn't pass. That's nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, lawmakers introduce bills and offer amendments all the time. The question is, does something become law?
And so what you're telling me is there's not an appetite for that to become law in your state.
There's not only not an appetite, there wouldn't be the votes for it.
But Senator Jill Shoup, who is also term limited out of office, thinks this issue isn't going away.
I believe that in the upcoming legislative session, or perhaps the one after, that these will be the topics that the Missouri legislature is talking about.
Now that abortion is banned in Missouri, she predicts conservative candidates will use birth control as a wedge issue to try and win elections.
I think in the state of Missouri, year after year after year, we have seen the goalposts being moved. It's not enough to just ban abortion in Missouri. We're going to see the banning of birth control.
In Congress, birth control is already the new political football. This summer, anti-abortion groups were watching when Democratic women unveiled what they called the Right to Contraception Act.
Let us be clear. We are not going back. For our daughters, our granddaughters, we are not going back.
It was less than a month after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said the bill was a response to a serious threat from, quote, radical Republicans who are going after contraception next.
This is their moment. Clarence Thomas has made that clear.
She's referring to Justice Thomas's concurring opinion. He wrote that the Supreme Court should also take a second look at a decades-old decision that protected the right to use contraception.
This rallying call by Justice Thomas and the actions of extremist Republican legislators are about one thing, control.
Representative Kathy Manning from North Carolina sponsored the bill.
And we will not let this happen.
The Right to Contraception Act would do for birth control what Democrats now wish they'd had the foresight to achieve with abortion years ago. It would enshrine in federal law people's right to use birth control and make it hard for states like Missouri to restrict people's access to it.
Remove all doubt that women are in control of their lives.
But opponents rally. One prominent anti-abortion group announces it will score against the bill, meaning ding any politician who votes for it, the same way the NRA does with lawmakers when they vote for gun control. The bill passes the House anyway, but then it goes to the Senate, where Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican, speaks against it.
The junior senator from Iowa.
Reserving the right to object, Madam President, here we are again. Another day, another sympathetically titled bill offered by my Democrat colleagues, where the talking points don't really give you the full story.
Senator Ernst claims the Democrats are trying to expand the definition of contraception.
And defines contraceptive in such a broad way that it could include drugs to induce an abortion weeks or months.
The bill dies in the Senate. Opposing birth control protections is now a way for politicians to prove just how pro-life they are.
That was Catherine Miskowski. She was the lead producer for this episode with help from Amy Mustafa and Richard Ye. Cynthia Rodriguez edited the show. This week's show was in collaboration with UC Berkeley's Human Rights Center and Berkeley Journalism's investigative reporting program, including Leah Romer, Emma McPhee, Isela Perez Diacha, Jay Wu, Brian Nguyen, Eliza Partika, and Eleonora Bianchi. Special thanks to Reveal's Nina Martin and Grace Oldham. Nikki Frick is our fact checker. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Amy the Great Mustafa. Score and sound design by the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. Our post-production team is the Justice League, and this week it includes Catherine Steyer Martinez and Claire C. Note Mullen. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Our COO is Maria Feldman. Our CEO is Robert Rosenthal. Our interim executive producers are Brett Myers and Taki Telenidis. Our theme song is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Hellman Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the In As Much Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson. And remember, there is always more to the story.